ba-da-ba-ba.
Ba-da-ba-ba.
All right.
I'm Sarah Beasley from Wolf Trap, and I'm on Promoter 101.
It's Thanksgiving break, and we're coming to you a day early for your holiday travel pleasures. It's episode 110 of the Promoter 101 podcast. Happy Turkey Day, everyone.
It's hard to believe it's the holiday season again, and we've got some gifts rolling out to you. We've got a doozy for you this week. As promised, we've got Bernie Cahill's keynote from Billboard Live Music Summit. That's the man behind Activist Artist Management, guiding the careers of Empire of the Sun, Bob Weir, Dwight Yoakam, and now the Lumineers, who sat down with Dan for a one-on-one during Billboard Live Music Summit last week in Beverly Hills in a discussion that truly had no boundaries.
I'm very proud of the session. It really came out well, and I truly hope you all enjoy it. Big thank you to Dave Brooks and the Billboard team for just being amazing hosts.
That full interview and more, we cannot wait for it.
This is Andrea Johnson from ICM Partners, and you're listening to Promoter 101.
If you want to see this podcast live and direct, we're going to be recording a live show on Wednesday, January 30th, 2019 in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Hey, it's free and we'll be on campus at the University of Arts at the Kaplan Recital Hall featuring special guests from Live Nation's Philly, Jeff Gordon.
That's right. As Dan mentioned, admission is free thanks to our friends at the University of the Arts. Doors will open at 6:30. Have your asses in the seats early. It's a small theater and the show is going to start right at 7 o'clock.
Did you know that you can pretty much listen to Promoter 101 anywhere?
That's right. You can find us on Spotify, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, SoundCloud, YouTube, Google Music, iTunes, wherever you podcast, we're there.
Follow us on Twitter, Luke's W. Luke Pierce. I'm the Jew, and the show's Promoter 101 or Promoters 101, depending how you like the plural or not.
You can always hit us up on email, steiny@promoter101.net. That'll go to both of us.
Patty Ann Tarleton. I'm overseeing Canada for Ticketmaster today, and I'm on Promoter 101.
If you've missed any of our past podcasts, well, here's your chance to catch up at promoter101.net. This week, we're featuring a reissue of episode 66.
Episode 66 was a great one. It included some awesome interviews, including Dayglo Ventures founder from the Brooklyn Bowl, Relics Magazine, and the Locken Festival owner, the man behind Fairly Well, 50 Years of Grateful Dead, Peter Shapiro, sat down with us at Ticketfly's FlyCon in January of last year down in New Orleans.
Hey, don't forget to drop us a review and subscribe and, you know, do all the things.
That's right. All the things, Dan.
You know the things.
Hi, I'm Leslie Olenek from Live Nation Touring, and I'm on Promoter 101.
And welcome back to P101 News Network, where our favorite side dish is stuffing. I'm Stan Manberger. Due to the nature of Thanksgiving, everyone is too busy stuffing themselves full of delicious meats and avoiding their significant other's family this holiday weekend for there to be much hard-hitting news for us to bring to you. However, in completely unrelated news, sources are telling us that there has been an alarming rise in reports nationwide of unexplained turkey murders this week. Could it be aliens? Find out next time, right here on P101 News Network.
This is Marcia Vlasic, president of AGI Talent Agency, on Promoter 101.
It's everyone's favorite time of the week. It's the announcement of the Promoter 101 Badass of the Week.
I wonder how many times they say Promoter 101 in an episode of Promoter 101. It's probably a lot, huh? Anyway, this week, we are really excited to announce the Promoter 101 Badass of the Week. Just in time for Thanksgiving, activists Liz Norris. Yes, her kindness and mind are unmatched in this biz, making her Promoter 101's Badass of the Week.
Congrats goes out to Liz. Very well timed coming out of Bernie's interview in Billboard. Imagine that might have had something to do with it, Dan.
I can tell you that that interview may not have happened at all without her help.
Shout out to Liz for her great work in it.
I'm Lucy Dickens from ITB, and I'm on Promoter 101.
Tweets of the Week.
It's that time of the hour to focus our attention on Steiny's Tweets of the Week. Let's start here. When an agent sends you a 36-page rider and asks for a local orchestra for an act you've never heard of.
Yeah, that's simple. Pass.
Fucking Steinberg, you don't pass in a room. What the hell is wrong with you? Quote attributed to Jason Zink.
When they ask for a local orchestra for an act you've never heard of, you absolutely fucking do pass. In the room, it doesn't matter. Thank you, Jason Zink.
When an agent and manager start fighting on an email string and you're super entertained until they ask you to back them up.
Always best to act like it just went through your spam filter at that point. It was really, really funny while it lasted, though.
And that'll do it for Promoter 101 Tweets of the Week. Make sure you keep up with Dan on Twitter. He's at The Jew.
Hi, it's Marcy Allen, president of Mac Presents, and honored to be on Promoter 101.
In our featured interview on this episode, episode 110 of Promoter 101, as promised, we've got an interview with Bernie Cahill from Billboard Live Music Summit, the man behind Activist Artist Management, guiding the careers of some amazing acts, including Bob Weir, Dwight Yoakam, Empire of the Sun, and now the Lumineers. He sat down with our very own Dan Steinberg in a one-on-one interview. Now, let's turn it over to Billboard editorial director Jason Lipschitz for the official introductions.
In our first one-on-one conversation today at the Billboard Live Music Summit, we welcome to the stage one of music's brightest managers and a young promoter who recently was acquired by Live Nation, thanks in part to his popular podcast. Please put your hands together for Activist Artist Management's Bernie Cahill and Promoter 101 and Emporium Presents Dan Steinberg.
Good afternoon. For those of you that do not know, Bernie Cahill, he's a founding partner and activist. Over the next half hour, we'll explore how he went from practicing law in Nashville to becoming the mega manager of acts that include Zac Brown, Empire of the Sun, Bob Weir, Dwight Yoakam, and now the Lumineers. Bernie, welcome to your Promoter 101 Billboard Live keynote interview. Make him feel at home, Billboard. So here's what the industry has to say about you. Peter Shapiro, Bernie is a great asset for the dead because he brings savvy and sophistication to a world that needs that. Ken Levitan, the highest compliment a manager can give another manager is he hates competing with them. I absolutely hate it when I hear Bernie's going after a client I want because I can't get mad when Bernie wins because he's a worthy adversary and because he's a good person and a good friend. Jonathan Levine declares, Bernie Cahill is a man of action. A man of incredible competence, a man of crystal clear vision, and a creative force in the truest sense. If that weren't enough, Bernie has got more soul than Memphis, more hip than Brooklyn, more bandwidth than Cupertino, and more style than Milan. Oh yeah, and he also happens to be a pretty decent manager. Well shit, I'm ready to vote for you.
Can we end this right here?
A lot of people really seem to fucking love you. Let's dig into that mind and find out why.
First of all, can I just say that for as many amazing artists as I represent and the amazing music that they've made, this podcast music sticks in my head. I tell you.
Craig Newman.
I'm not the only one.
Writer of the song. Tongue bath.
Well done.
So you went from being an attorney in Tennessee to managing some of the biggest careers in rock in Beverly Hills. How did that happen?
Yeah, so I was an intellectual property lawyer, and my practice was an interesting one. We would represent artists, songwriters, and we did a lot of development work as lawyers. And by development work, I mean we would represent songwriters early in the process, shop them for deals, represent artists early that were, you know, looking for deals. And that was when I met Matt Maher, who is a partner today and who, you know, as we sort of talk up here, a lot of what, you know, I've done is really what we've done over the years at Roar and now at Activist with Matt was the first, let's see, I represented him when he was signed to Kepler Records LA, and he used to help me shop artists and songwriters for publishing deals in Nashville. And we had a lot of success doing that. But what we saw that we would hand off these talented creatives to managers, some who were amazing, like Ken Levitan and Gary Borman and guys like that, that we worked very closely with and were the best in the business. And then others that weren't so great, right? Whether they were, you know, the high school friend or family, et cetera. And that was frustrating for us. And we wanted to be involved in a deeper way in the careers of these artists. And it was really that that sort of spawned the path to management. And now, of course, as a manager, you get to be involved in everything rather than just turning paper around.
So we're all friends here. Can you give us some inside dirt? How long did it take you to get all the guys from the dead to learn those John Mayer songs?
Exactly. I'll tell you, John One thing I will say about John, he doesn't get enough credit. He showed up ready. He had a binder the first day of rehearsals for Denko, and the binder was 3 pages per song, and he knew 20 plus songs cold. And in Dead World, a song is, that can be a 20-minute exercise. So it just sort of shows his respect for the material, his respect for the guys, and how serious he took it.
So at some point, will they cover one of his songs?
I think they should. I know that's probably blasphemy. Pete Shapiro somewhere is crapping himself. But listen, John's a true artist and writes real songs. So why not? One thing's for sure, the Dead don't follow any rules. So it wouldn't surprise me.
Dwight Yoakam is one of your long-term management clients. Over the past summer, you packaged him up with Lucinda Williams and Steve Earle, calling it the LSD tour, making a package that was truly worth more than the sum of its parts. How did that come together, and did the name cause you any issues?
It came together because Dwight loves sharing the stage and sharing the bill with other amazing artists. He's toured with everybody from Sturgill, which is a Jonathan Levine delivery, to Midland and many others. And in fact, little known fact, he was going to go on tour with Bob Weir, and that tour was unfortunately canceled. But
couldn't get management to come to the table?
Exactly. So, but Dwight, we really spawned from a phone call with John Huey, Dwight Yoakam, Matt Maher, and they were talking about these icons, pulling them together, getting a bigger package that could get into bigger rooms. And it really spawned from that phone call. And yeah, LSD is a bit provocative, particularly for that genre of music. So while we had a number of conversations, it was a bit of an impediment ultimately.
Could have been a great bundling experience though.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like you should lay down and we should really get into your psyche here with this counseling setup here.
Talk about my childhood. Yeah,
absolutely. Well, let's get into that actually. You discovered Zac Brown early on. From the beanie to the beard, he's not your typical country star. How did you know there was more there than meets the eyes?
Well, Zac, if you meet him, you know right away. He's a force of nature. He's a very special human, and he is one of these authentic guys who we discovered him through the Rock Boat, which is Andy Levine's operation, where he takes these Carnival cruise ships out and throws 20, 25 bands on them. And these bands all play 3 or 4 shows, and there's no massive headliner on the show. But Zac would play 4 hours to his show. And when I say he played 4 hours, literally, he would play 4 hours. Then he'd go to the bar and play for another 5 hours. And so he really created a bit of a legend. And everyone was aware of his, not just his artistry, but what a hard worker he was. And that always appeals to managers, because there's a lot of talented people out there, talented artists that don't put the work in and maybe rely on their talent a bit too much. And Zac was never one of those guys.
All right. So
he also, by the way, had the songs even back then. He's an incredible songwriter.
You broke Zac before his first record. You were involved very early before that first record broke. You took him all the way to selling out a 3-night stand at Fenway Park in Boston, and then he left you. As a manager, how are you not curled up in the field position after losing an act like that?
Well, how do you know I wasn't, first of all?
You sure you don't want to lay down? It's cool.
I feel like we're
going to talk to me, Bernie. Let's get into this.
Listen, any manager that acts like that's not a punch to the stomach, I think would be a bit full of it, particularly when there's such a big client. And particularly when you believe in somebody, like it's the interesting way that losing a client manifests is that the next day you wake up and you're no longer selling and sort of preaching the gospel of a particular client. And it's a really interesting place to be. And what it does is it also opens up a lot of, I mean, we have this incredible team, I think the best team in the business. And I was very proud that when Zac went in-house, nobody lost their job. We, in fact, had a couple of hires that we were in the process of making that we brought in. And so, yes, it sucked for sure. It was something that I'm still friends with Zac, the band. Those guys are incredible guys. And Zac was an entrepreneurial guy. It didn't come out of the blue. I can say that. We moved business management in-house. And I think that we had an idea that at some point this would be the course.
I think a lot of people pretend it's not part of the normal business, but I don't think there's any manager, agent, or promoter that hasn't lost their share of acts. It's just part of a long-term career. You just do.
Yeah, if you're in the game long enough, you're going to probably have this happen. I mean, we'd all love to be Landau and Springsteen. And I think that in this era, it's more difficult to have that kind of relationship, but it's what we all aspire to.
With Zac and Dead & Company in mind, you often play stadium dates instead of sticking to the safety of the sheds for multiples. Why?
Well, first of all, you're not suffering through sort of the inferior sound quality that we used to. When you've got guys like Derek Featherstone that can dial in a stadium, you sort of deal with a threshold issue, which is, as a manager, you always want to make sure the music is presented in the best possible way. If you can address that, then going into stadiums is an event. I mean, it's our own festival, essentially. And when you've got the entire community looking at a routing and they see Folsom, they see 2 days of Folsom in Boulder, I can tell you that editorially what that does for an entire tour and what that does for the band also likes the challenge of going into these big rooms and engaging with their audience at scale. And it provides really the fans with an incredible opportunity to come together en masse. And again, it's a festival environment at a headline show, and it's very special. And if you guys haven't been to Boulder for these Folsom shows, it's remarkable and you should make an effort to get there.
I experienced that this year. It's the secondary high on the floor alone was fucking incredible.
Yeah.
Well, but it's legal in Colorado. It's totally legal.
It's legal there.
I'm not sure that the whippets were that they were selling everywhere, but hey.
It's crazy that's still a thing.
Wah, wah, wah. You recently signed the Lumineers. Can you tell us how that came to be?
Yeah, so that was a highly competitive situation. We were lucky that we knew some of the folks that were involved from a business management standpoint to sort of agency standpoint. And when we heard they were taking meetings, we inquired. We were one of the last managers added to that horse race, and we were lucky to get in. We knew the Lumineers for many years, and we were fans of their music. In fact, we booked them on the Zac Brown Southern Ground Festival, so we've known and followed them since their first album.
When you get involved with an act that massive, is there a lot of pressure not to fuck it all up?
Yeah, immense. It's funny, though, because whether it's an unknown sort of developing act or it's a big artist like that, the responsibility is the same because they're entrusting you with their careers. And we take it seriously. It's just it's a different skill set that's needed to go from what we do for a developing act versus somebody like the Lumineers. But in both cases, it's an honor that we are entrusted with this responsibility and we take it super seriously. And I can tell you, though, that with a band like the Lumineers, as successful as they are, there's a lot to be done there and a lot of fun we're going to have, particularly globally, which is a big focus of our company.
Can we talk about the Dead now?
Yeah, sure.
All right.
We're there already?
Let's do it. Let's get into the fun shit. With a legendary act like the Dead, how do you go about adding value and not hurting an established brand like that?
That was part of the challenge here. I mean, working with the Dead and working with Dead & Co., I mean, we had the benefit of sort of deep state Grateful Dead folks, right, who would not let me fuck up. And they would tell me where the bodies are buried and help us. You know, our first sort of mandate when we started working with them was to protect what was built, right? 50 years of equity in the music space and from the songbook to how they deliver on stage. So really, we approached it by protecting what was built and by working with some of the great people that are already around it. We didn't go in and fire everybody. We were lucky that, you know, I was introduced to the opportunity to work with them by Craig Fox, who's been an incredible resource and has really helped to guide us on where some of the bodies are buried. And then working with folks like Jonathan Levine and Mark Pincus at Rhino. So we have the benefit. I mean, that's one of the incredible things that I think managers get a lot of credit for. But when you work with the best bands in the business, you also get to work with the best representatives in the business. So we get to work with the Eric Greenspans and the Rit Venerises and the best in class in lawyers and business managers and labels. And so that's an incredible asset that we leverage on behalf of our clients. And it's something that I think is often overlooked. But again, just like working with Matt and my partners, Greg Cease and Liz Norris and all the people that make it happen, it's the team ultimately. So it's about protecting and then building. And there's the build, I think you've seen, has been significant since we came on board.
Now, when it comes to the Dead, the fans really do protect that brand. How does that work? And how do you interact with that? Because that's a very protective thing, right?
Yeah, it's unique, I think, in all of music. I mean, they have sort of an ownership over the music, over the band, and it can really be great, but could also in some ways be limiting. I think when Dead & Co. was an idea, we were coming off of Fairly Well, which Pete Shapiro had put together, and it was a massive success. I mean, talk about a mic drop moment for Pete, right? And so I think there was a lot of reticence with some of the deep state folks that Dead & Co. and with John Mayer and On Paper, did it make sense, et cetera. And for us, we knew how good it was. we had the benefit of seeing the rehearsals. We had the benefit of seeing the chemistry between Bob and John. And we knew we just needed people to see it live. The fans in the beginning, there were a lot of haters. I think you were among them, weren't you, Steiny?
Guilty.
Tell the truth, yeah. So you're trying to make up for it now.
But you're the one on the couch, dude.
Yeah, exactly. You can lie down over there. So there were a lot of haters. And I think that when the band is so good, we knew that the community, if they gave it a chance, would embrace it because it was authentic and real. And you couldn't deny what Kreutzmann and Mickey Hart and Bob and John were doing up there. It was and is magical.
Well, let's do a speed round. These are just either or questions. They're going to be really simple for you. Vinyl or MP3?
Vinyl. By the way, somebody sent me an MP3 yesterday, and I didn't know what it was.
Billboard or Polestar?
Billboard, of course.
Who's a better manager, in your opinion, Irving Azoff or Corin Capshaw?
Pass. Can I pass on that? Like...
I didn't expect you to answer. Last year, the Dead played an exclusive benefit for 260 guests. How did you manage to talk the band of the people into playing a private benefit for the one percenters in Beverly Hills?
This is why you're a promoter, so I definitely didn't phrase it that way. Hey, Bob, want to play a private for the one percenters? No. Instead, I said, hey, I think we can raise $1 million+ for about 90 minutes. And I got a call from Keith Addis, who's the president of Oceana, and it's an incredible organization. If you guys don't know it, check it out. And he's like, told me a little bit about what they do and the important work they do. And I was aware of it from my friendship with Keith. And I just went to the guys. It was a 1 second conversation. And by the way, it was the day after the Dodgers stadium show. And to say that they were exhausted would be an understatement. It was like 100 degrees. I don't know if anybody was there.
108, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. It was withering. And they showed up. They did pictures. They did the whole nine yards with the VIPs. And we ended up raising $1.5 million for Oceana.
That's incredible. Yeah, you can give him applause for that. That's serious. So let's go back to Irving for a second. So he manages Mayer. What is co-managing Dead & Company with him like?
It's great because Irving is super efficient for one thing. I mean, he's a legend. And so you've got when we need something that mere mortal managers may have a problem with, it's great to be able to pick up the phone and get Irving. His partnership on this with Steve Moyer has been great. Those guys have been incredible. And you know, he's a force of nature, and I've learned a lot working with him.
Most of your acts are known for their live show. Is that what you look for first in a client?
100%. We've missed out on a lot of signing meetings. I mean, we don't take a lot of meetings. We don't want to be red light. I love what Corn has done there, but it's not our model. We're a boutique management firm. We're very hands-on. We have a small group of clients that we throw the kitchen sink behind. And with all of them, they're all live acts. And so for us, we won't even take a signing meeting if we haven't seen the act live. And you can imagine when you hear, you name it, looking for management, and they could be amazing, and we haven't seen them live, and there are no tour dates, we're not going to take that meeting.
Let's go back to the Dead for a second. Dead & Company rolled out right after Fare Thee Well. So many Deadheads were total snobs about John Mayer playing with Bill, Mickey, and Bobby. Haters were everywhere. I'm guilty of this myself. But now we're coming out of year three, and the word is out. They're absolutely the real deal live. They're not the Grateful Dead. Nothing is. But they're the closest thing like it on the road. How did you manage to turn me and all the other haters around in 3 years?
Well, I didn't do it. The band did it. They're just too good. I mean, a lot of what we did was when we realized how much fun these guys were having, that they would want to do it and they would want to do it in a big way. Part of what we did was we got them to do late night TV and they did press and they did some things that maybe in the past they wouldn't have done. And it was just based on the simple premise that they're so good, John's so good, this music is now being expressed in a slightly different way, but in an amazing, elevated way. And we would start to get these sort of deep staters and these champions on board. Nobody saw them live. Even the haters who would see them live were like, you know what? It's pretty great. You're right. So we just needed to get it out there and have people see it.
Does Nuggets help with that live streaming? And
definitely. Yeah, the Nugs guys have been great. You know, a lot of what we did is we would stream, you know, we do sort of Facebook Live or we do Instagram Live. We do these different sort of free streams into our Nugs stream. And that was a big part of the strategy, too.
So let's play real or rumor. There are a lot of stories out there. Let's figure out what's real and what's urban folklore. Real or rumor, you've never poached a client from another manager.
Never. And there's still some of us managers that respect those relationships, although it feels like it's changing out there.
Real or rumor, you live at Burning Man during the summer.
Do I live there? Yeah, I'm basically blacked out. It's my ninth Burning Man was this last year. I have a hilarious Irving Azoff satellite phone call story to tell you one time from Burning Man, but this is not the place for it.
Real or rumor, you were originally going to name the band Merrily Dead.
Rumor.
Real or rumor, you and Kanye West are buddies?
Well, we used to be. I was a vice president of his board of directors back when his mom was alive and we did some amazing work together. And
were you able to control him when you were the vice president of his board?
Definitely not. No, nobody does, but what an incredible artist.
Real or rumor, Dead & Company came about due to a late night TV show.
Real. Bob did Late Late Night with John when John was hosting for the week. They played together. I was there with Mike Fleiss, actually, one of Bob's close friends, and saw him walking off stage. I'm like, this is magic. And Bob's like, we should do more of this. Literally, that was the genesis.
Nice. Real or rumor, you're still a member of the Tennessee Bar?
Real.
Can you help me with a parking ticket? You actually left Roar, real or rumor, because you hated working in a building with a sign that crazy big.
Yeah. God, that is a big sign.
Fucking thing is huge.
Yeah. Jeez.
So, you don't need GPS. Just look for the Roar sign.
Well, I'll tell you what's funny and somewhat humiliating about that sign. When we first started Roar and we didn't really have any clients, that sign went up. And I remember a big agent at a big agency who was a friend of mine was like, he said the phrase, all hat and no cattle. I remember how soul crushing that was. And I vowed to build an empire. No. So
let's just rip off the Band-Aid since we're here. Why the fuck did you leave Roar? I mean, the sign was already up.
Yeah, exactly. So Roar, we had an incredible run there and a lot of success. I think, you know, whether it's a band or some marriages, you either grow together or you grow apart. I think in this case, my vision for the company, which I share with Matt and with my partner, Greg Cease and Liz Norris, who are all partners in the new company, it wasn't really shared at Roar anymore. And so in order to sort of bring that to life, we had to do our own thing. And that's what we're doing.
So, and how did Activist come about?
So really, we started April 1st. And Activist is essentially, it's 100% of the music department at Roar, 100% of the corporate department, all the music clients. And sort of some of the big differences at Activist is two interesting ones. So Matt and Greg Cease came with. Matt, who still runs our Nashville office. Matt and I have been together like 20 years now. It's crazy. And then we made Liz Norris a partner. And Liz had been with us at Roar for 10 plus years, 12, 13 years, I think. And we made her a partner right away. And at Activist now, we're partners with the Kahn family. They came in and they've helped us establish an investment fund for investments in media, hospitality, entertainment, and some social good component. That's a big thing. Tony Kahn is an incredible guy and somebody that has, you know, we didn't have any partners at Roar. So it's great to get new perspectives and have, you know, that kind of resource.
Bernie, you've been a great sport. Thank you so much for being here. Thanks for being a great audience. Enjoy the rest of your day here at Billboard Live.
Thanks, Dan.
I want to thank Bernie for being so open and honest, answering all my questions. It's a little hard sometimes when you're out there vulnerable in front of the entire industry between the podcast and that live audience. And he handled it like a champ, Luke. I thought he was great.
An excellent interview indeed. A huge thanks to Bernie and to everybody at Billboard for hosting Dan and this amazing interview.
Hi, it's Paola Palazzo from Live Nation Concerts Canada on Promoter 101.
Hey, some times for birthdays of the week, Dan, November 23rd to the 29th, 2018. Let's kick it off this Friday. Happy birthday to Kelly Logue, Janet Johnson, Yonine Fellman, and Joanne Lee.
Saturday the 24th, Kit Kesey from the McDonald Theater. Happy birthday.
On the 25th, that's Sunday, happy birthday to David Galea, Seaman Galperin, Chris Machuda, and APA's Steve Lassiter.
Hey, Monday the 26th, Chris Looney, happy birthday, dude.
On Tuesday the 27th, wishing a happy birthday to AEG's Mike Ducharme and Melody King.
Wednesday the 28th of November, Fresno's big independent promoter, Art Silva.
And on Thursday the 29th, wishing a happy birthday to JJ Cassieri, Jamie Parker, and WME's Jay Williams.
Hey, happy birthday to all you from like me and Luke and Connor and, you know, probably other people that know you probably want to wish you a happy birthday. Just look at your Facebook page. People will be wishing you. It's fine.
Hi, it's Kim Badir with City of Tacoma Venues and Events, appearing on Promoter 101. Glad to represent all Canadians everywhere, particularly those who have landed in the U.S. of A.
That'll do it for episode 110 of the world-famous Promoter 101 podcast.
Hey, the quote of the week comes to us from Nick Cave. People who wait for inspiration aren't really doing anything. I work every day, whether I feel like it or not. It's pretty deep, Luke.
Pretty good advice there. We appreciate everybody tuning in. And we're going to be back next week, episode 111 of the Promoter 101 podcast, with a true icon of this industry, Mr. Dan Weiner from Paradigm, talking about his 50-plus years of experience in the industry. Plus, we're going to be joined by SMG Tulsa's Joe Giordano, sharing some insights on the success of the BOK Center. And we've got AG's Jason Bernstein back with more legal advice.
Feel free to write us at steiny@promoter101.net. You can send your holiday wishes or just tell us how much you really, really liked the episodes. I got to tell you, Luke, we got more reviews on last week's interview with Mr. Fred Rosen than I think we've seen in a very, very long time. People definitely had their opinions, mostly interested of the history. And I thought that was really, really cool. But until next week, we're wishing you moist turkeys and candied yams for the weeks to come.
Cheers.
Lucy Lawler-Freese, Rival Entertainment and the Fox Theater in Atlanta, Georgia, and I'm on Promoter 101. Ooh. Ba-da-ba-ba.